I want to begin, though, with the top story in Brian's news bulletin there at 10 o'clock, the HSE's appeal to people to consider all options before attending an emergency department hospital. This appeal comes after a major internal incident was declared yesterday at University Hospital Limerick due to record high attendances at the hospital's emergency department. Speaking on Morning Ireland, HSE Chief Operations Officer Damien McCallion said emergency departments are becoming extremely busy due to the unprecedented combinations of very high levels of flu, COVID-19 and other respiratory illnesses in the community. For more on this now, I'm joined on the line by Dr. Fergal Hickey, Communications Officer for the Irish Association of Emergency Medicine and a former consultant in emergency medicine at Sligo University Hospital. Very good morning. Happy New Year to you, Fergal.
Many happy returns.
What is your opinion on calls such as the one we heard from Damien McCallion this morning?
I mean, superficially, it seems to make sense, but the evidence is that it's not the right thing to do. And I suppose we need to also look at it in an Irish context. So a lot of people don't have a GP or can't access a GP. So suggesting to people they go to their GP when that isn't an option available to them doesn't make a lot of sense. Furthermore, although the term local injury unit was used, the actual correct term is just injury unit, but they're not suitable places for people with respiratory conditions. So they won't be permitted to enter an injury unit. And I'm not sure what pharmacists can achieve over and above, you know, offering over-the-counter medication. So it does seem to be a rather pointless exercise. The other evidence
that we have... What happens, though, when a call like that is made? What does end up happening?
Well, what happens is the only people that pay any attention to it is older people. And they are the group that are more likely to have the conditions which require them to be seen in an emergency department. So what we've seen historically is that people present late with heart attacks and strokes because they've been told not to go to an emergency department and they have followed that advice.
And why would it be that cohort, do you think, Fergal, that would pay attention to a call like that?
I think they're more, well, first of all, they're more likely to be listening to the radio and reading the newspapers, so they're certainly more aware of the information being given to them, and they're more likely, as a group, they're a more compliant group, and they're more likely to take the advice, assuming that the advice is accurate, which, of course, in this situation, it isn't particularly accurate. So we've said this repeatedly to HSE comms, we've said it to individual hospitals, we've said, look, this is not the right thing to do, but I think it's done in the absence of being able to do anything else.
Yeah, well, that was my next question, is there, if not a silver bullet, is there a next best option?
Not really. I mean, they need to solve the underlying problems. And, you know, these underlying problems we faced long before COVID. They've been going on for years. So, I mean, as you and I have spoken about before, Philip, we are short of acute hospital beds. And that's a distinction, that's a very negative distinction we share with the UK. And it's no wonder that both systems have fallen over spectacularly in the way that they have. So we have 2.8 acute hospital beds per 1,000 of the population. The OECD average is 4.3. So at the best of times, we struggle, and we seem to be incapable of doing elective, in other words, planned activity and emergency activity simultaneously. And then when you add a stressor like COVID or influenza to the mix, then the whole system falls over. And until and unless we actually address that problem and stop talking around it and stop effectively moving deck chairs around in the Titanic, we're going to be in this situation on an ongoing basis. The problem, of course, is that this kills people. And, you know, there is clear evidence to show that two things we know for a fact. We know that if you come to a crowded emergency department, your 14-day and 28-day mortality increases. That's a fact. We've known that for almost 20 years. And the second thing we know for a fact is if you have a prolonged delay from the time that you arrive at an emergency department to the time that you're actually admitted to a hospital bed if you need admission, then that contributes to excess mortality. These are people who wouldn't otherwise die. So we know that this is killing people.
What is it that has specifically gone so spectacularly wrong in University Hospital Limerick, do you think? I mean, did you hear Professor Declan Lyons on Morning Ireland describing the situation this way? He said, you barely have room to get between one trolley and the next, and you're competing for that space.
Yeah, and I can imagine that, and that's the case in many emergency departments around the country. I mean, this has been allowed to happen And there will be a point at some stage in the future when there's either a public inquiry or there's a tribunal of inquiry into why this was allowed to happen and why we were happy to allow particularly older people die as a direct result of this. But the reality is that emergency departments are seeing increasing number of patients year on year, and we don't have the capacity to get them out the other end. So when we decide that somebody requires hospital admission, there isn't a bed for them to go into, and therefore they end up remaining in the emergency department, which then becomes a warehouse for admitted inpatients, but also a warehouse for infection. And that's a significant issue. Now, Limerick has particular problems related to the fact that its bed stock is far too little for the population and the workload. And when reconfiguration happened, and when both Ennis and Nina, when their status was changed, the necessary bed increase didn't happen. And we're paying the price in Limerick for that.
Mm-hmm. I read a study, it is only a single study, let me put in that little health warning before we draw any major conclusions from it, but I wonder, does it chime with your experience of what we're seeing at the moment, that suggested that what public health experts need to look to now is the cumulative effect of exposure to several COVID infections on people's immune system and their ability to fight not just COVID, but all of these other respiratory illnesses doing the rounds at the moment. Do you think that that is something that we are seeing impacting on this current situation now? Might it be something that we need to take into account in making future plans for our health system and its capacity?
Well, the biggest single thing we could do in terms of the health service in going forward would be to ensure that we have enough beds, but we have enough isolation facilities, because this is not going to be the last pandemic that we're going to see in your lifetime or mine. I think there's a number of issues at play.
Do you mean two systems, an isolation system and a general system such as we operate in many hospitals?
I mean, you know, in very simple terms, Philip, if you come into an emergency department, you're likely to be in a common area. You're going to be in a common waiting room. You're going to be in a common area with other patients, some of whom may be more vulnerable than you. And if you have a respiratory infection, the high likelihood that you're going to communicate it to those other patients, because we simply don't have the isolation facilities. We're not capable of separating one patient from another. And this was exposed very badly during COVID. But now that we have influenza at play as well, plus more COVID, and plus the opportunity in the future of a more resistant form of COVID, plus all the other respiratory infections that you've mentioned, then, you know, emergency departments are just acting as a big petri dish for this. Now, there's no doubt that the normal pattern would be that, you know, there are certain respiratory conditions that are prevalent during the winter, and by and large, the community acquires a certain amount of immunity to these. So, you know, you may have been exposed to something a year ago or 2 years ago, and you have a degree of residual immunity. The problem, and we had no choice but to do it, but the fact that we had to isolate people from one another meant that their immunity to many of the more common bugs that were doing the rounds, I'm not talking about COVID, but many of the more common bugs was lost, and therefore they're now much more vulnerable to this because they don't have immunity to it.
So it's not necessarily that our immune systems have weakened so much as we isolated ourselves from these bugs.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that, I mean, that may well be a factor, but I don't think we're at the stage of being able to definitively say that yet.
Stay on the line, if you would, please, Fergal. I'm also joined by Michael McNamara, Independent TD for Clare. Good morning to you, Michael, and Happy New Year as well, though I'm sure you must be concerned about any of your constituents heading to hospital at the moment.
No, of course I am. I mean, you know, Limerick Hospital is consistently the most overcrowded hospital in the country, has been for some time. It's always under pressure. Every hospital in the country is now under pressure because of the increase in respiratory viruses circulating. But when that pressure comes on, Limerick is probably the least well-equipped hospital in the country to deal with it because of the consistent overcrowding there. I mean, there were up to December 21st, there were 17,640 people in trolleys, and the next most overcrowded hospital was Cork with 12,133. So, you know, we do see that it's the most overcrowded hospital. There was a report published by HICWA in June into a visit that they carried out just before St. Patrick's weekend, which questioned whether Limerick posed a threat to patient safety. I suppose a lot of people across the Midwest would have expected a government intervention after that. Almost nothing happened. There are consistently, you have the consultants, non-consultants, hospital doctors reaching out, but maybe largely afraid to actually issue public comments because of fear of retribution from management in Limerick. It's under extreme pressure.
That can't be said of Professor Declan Lyons this morning calling these conditions inhumane. The question that flows from that is, what do you do to address those conditions?
Well, I mean, you greatly increase capacity, both in terms of human resources and in terms of actual capacity. I mean, Dr. Hickey pointed out that when Ennis and Nina were closed, that there was to be a huge increase in Limerick to... they weren't closed, but when the
emergency
closed,
departments were, yeah.
And they were sort of downgraded, I suppose, to Model 2 hospitals. There was to be a big increase in Limerick to compensate for that. That never happened. The people, I think, in Navan are rightly resisting any downgrading of Navan Hospital until there's additional capacity put in place in the hospitals that they're expected to go to. That never happened in Limerick. It still hasn't happened in Limerick. Elective hospitals are being mooted as one potential solution. I mean, I'm hesitant to accept that they will be, because, of course, elective hospitals are fined for... they will be particularly beneficial to people who have private health insurance. To those who don't, they'll be less beneficial, although elective surgeries will probably be carried out in those two public patients as well as private ones. But obviously, we know that elective healthcare is more available to people with health insurance. But there were elective hospitals announced for Galway, Cork and Dublin and Limerick, despite the fact that it was the most overcrowded hospital in the country, despite the fact that it was mooted as one of the possible solutions.
We might get Fergal Hickey's take on that. Can we deal with the first one first? It is superficially quite elegant, Fergal, isn't it, that the resources that were present in Ennis Emergency Department when it was closed should have been transferred lock, stock and barrel to Limerick. Were they?
Well, I think the issue is that it's not the capacity of the emergency department, and I think we need to not lose sight of that. So the emergency department would function in Limerick if it could get people out the other end. So if a decision is made that somebody requires admission, if there was a bed to go to, then Limerick would function, and Limerick would function well. In fact, it's one of the newer emergency departments in the country, and infrastructurally, it's better than most. The problem is there's no bed into which to admit people. And that was what was supposed to happen at the point of reconfiguration, that Limerick was supposed to have an uplift in its number of beds so as to be able to accommodate those that would require admission from the region. Now, there was also a need to be able to repatriate people. So people who've had their acute care in Limerick need to be able to go to Ennis and Nina, and that doesn't appear to have worked as well as it should. So Limerick has the problem that it doesn't have enough acute beds, and a proportion of those are occupied by people who could be moved on to Ennis and Nina in a way that hasn't happened.
And Michael McNamara's suggestion about elective hospitals?
Well, remember that the people on trolleys are people who require emergency admission. I mean, as I said to you at the outset, I mean, our basic problem is that we don't have enough beds, acute hospital beds per 1,000 in the population, as we need. Having elective beds will mean that there is less competition between elective activity and emergency activity. But in recent weeks, for example, there's been so little emergency activity going on that all we're seeing is the effects of emergency activity, and the system still can't cope. So elective hospitals alone will not solve the problem unless we increase the acute capacity, which we have singularly failed to do. And when the public inquiry comes at some stage in the future, and no doubt there will be a public inquiry into this, then many ministers for health, many politicians, many senior figures in the HSE will do well to be able to explain why they haven't addressed the underlying problem.
Let me hop one last question to you, Michael McNamara, on this idea of inquiries. There's calls now for a COVID inquiry. You've heard Fergal talking about an overcrowding inquiry. Is the most pressing inquiry that is needed not the one that addresses the situation, the crisis that people find themselves in right now, rather than going back and possibly patting ourselves on the backs over how we did or didn't handle COVID 3 years ago?
I mean, we know what the problems are in Limerick. I mean, Dr. Hickey has articulated them, HICWA have articulated them, numerous consultants and non-consultant hospital doctors and representatives of the INMO have articulated them. There simply isn't enough capacity there. That needs to be put in place quickly. I think there's also a question around management of existing resources that was pointed to by the HICWA report, and nothing has been done about that either. So, I mean, we need to greatly increase resources in Limerick, and there needs to be better management of existing resources. I mean, morale is also at a very low place in Limerick at the moment, and how could it not be, given that very dedicated doctors and nurses are going in there day in, day out, dealing with the most overcrowded hospital in the country, and it consistently remains that. So, I mean, we know what needs to be done. I think an inquiry, I've no problem with an inquiry, and I do think...
But it might be a waste of political energy.
Well, I'd like to see, I mean, Micheál Martin undoubtedly has questions to answer if you look at how Cork has been treated compared to Limerick during his, and the book stops somewhere. It stops with the Taoiseach. He is the head of government and chooses the ministers for health. There are four current or former ministers for health in this cabinet, have been since the start of it, so they all know very clearly what the problem is. But I mean, you know, political blaming is all well and good down the line, and obviously somebody has to be held responsible, but for now we know what the problems are. We need more resources in the Midwest. Generally, I mean, Hickwood was quite pointing to the fact that there was only one Model 3 hospital in the region compared to any of the other regions in the country. Maybe we need to look at increasing the capacity of Innes or Nina or a second A&E in the region, but certainly we do need additional acute beds, and we do need there are less consultants, less NCHDs, less nurses and less beds per head of population in the Midwest than any other region in the country.
Michael McNamara, thank you very much, and also to Fergal Hickey.